My guest at this time is Dr. Jason Richwine. He is the Senior Policy Analyst for Empirical Studies in the Domestic Policy Studies Department at the Heritage Foundation. He is also the co-author of a brand new Heritage study examining the cost to American taxpayers if, in fact, the Gang of Eight immigration proposal were to go through. The title of the report is called The Fiscal Cost of Unlawful Immigrants and Amnesty to the U.S. Taxpayer. And he joins me now to explain how he arrived at some of his conclusions. And Jason, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, the big number getting all the attention today is $6.3 trillion. That's the net cost to the U.S. taxpayer. Your calculations show that overall the costs, the expenditures on legalizing these folks, extending amnesty, as you put it, would be $9.4 trillion. The tax revenue you'd get back in return, $3.1 trillion. So that's $6.3. What type of general numbers did you run on typical illegal immigrant families to figure out how these numbers would shake out?
Well, it's really quite comprehensive. We looked at basically all government spending, that's federal, state, and local, and we looked at all the taxes that immigrants pay in, and it's basically after that it's a matter of subtraction, the taxes that are paid and then the benefits that are received. As I said, it's very comprehensive, and probably the biggest categories that contribute to the fiscal deficit are public education and the federal means-tested programs that immigrants will receive after amnesty, as well as what happens in the future with retirement, especially Social Security and Medicare.
Now, in terms of the, in general, the type of contribution or loss, as it turns out, for the Treasury when it comes to an immigrant family, you point out, as most people would expect, that the better educated a household is, the more likely they are to be a net contributor than a net consumer. Most immigrants, of course, don't have that great of an education background. So how much of red ink are we starting with here with these folks?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the most important sort of qualitative thing to take away from the report, that it's really what I would consider common sense, in that we know that, you know, leaving immigration aside, you know, just looking at a typical native, for example, that whether you're a net tax consumer or contributor really depends on your education, because that determines how much money you make and therefore pay in taxes. So just for a typical native, you know, if you're a college graduate, you're going to be paying a lot more into the system than you're going to take out. But on the other hand, sort of the other end of the spectrum, if you are someone who doesn't have a high school degree or even just a high school degree, you're going to be taking in a lot more than what you pay into the system. And so with the group of immigrants who are currently here illegally, the average education is really quite low relative to native standards. In fact, the average education is somewhere around 10th grade. So it's not, you know, a defect of immigrants. It's just the fact that the educations tend to be low, and for that reason, it's going to end up costing U.S. taxpayers a lot more than I think they would prefer to pay.
And then how do you figure out over the course of their lifetime how much they'll end up netting from the government through our tax dollars? It's life expectancy, different benefits programs. How does that all shake out?
Right. It's we use sort of standard life expectancy numbers, and we come up with annual estimates based on aging the population through time. So if we want to know how much a household will be spending when they're 50 years old, we look at current 50-year-olds who are legal. And so when we take the current group of illegal immigrants and essentially just age them up over time based on similar experiences by legal immigrants.
We're talking with Dr. Jason Richwine. He's a senior policy analyst for empirical studies in the Domestic Policy Studies Department of the Heritage Foundation. And Jason, you address this next topic in your report as well, although it's also the issue that's drawing the largest amount of criticism from those who are either in favor of the plan, don't like your report. I don't know exactly what their general thesis is, but they say that the thing you're not considering here is the amount of improvement, amount of growth in the economy that will generate more revenue. This is almost a zero-sum game just with these families, but it doesn't take into consideration overall economic contribution. How do you respond to that?
It's very frustrating to hear that point made, because it's essentially citing magic as an excuse to ignore the study, which annoys me. Let's think about how immigration affects the economy. There's no doubt that more immigration will lead to a larger economy in general. We will certainly have a higher GDP the more people we bring in. That's not the relevant issue, though. The relevant issue, I think, for natives is to what extent does immigration benefit natives specifically? And what economists have found when they look at this question, sort of both from a theoretical and empirical perspective, is that, yes, immigrants do increase the size of the pie, but they eat almost the entire increase, leaving natives with a very, very tiny efficiency gain there. And we do include, of course, the effects of immigrants paying more taxes and their effects on the value of native capital, for example. But the idea that some kind of tiny efficiency gain accruing to natives on the order of something like 0.1% of GDP is going to somehow come anywhere close to the major fiscal cost that we identified is really rather absurd, and that's why it frustrates me so much that people will cite this. It's a way of just kind of avoiding the question. I would much rather them try to take this on more directly. You know, tell us what these amazing magical benefits are, because I certainly don't see them anywhere in the economics literature.
Another common complaint, and you address this in your report as well, is that, yes, we're going to be legalizing folks who have subpar education, but their kids will get a better education now that they're legal, and then therefore they will have higher incomes and will potentially be net contributors rather than net consumers. You point out that they'll be headed in that direction, but not actually getting there, correct?
That's right. So if you think about it, you know, $6.3 trillion is a lot of money. So the children, upon growing up, would, of course, have to be major net tax contributors to come anywhere close to making that up. But what we find, you know, if you look at sort of basic intergenerational mobility numbers, is that they will do better in terms of education, but not enough to make them net tax contributors at all. In other words, they will still be net negatives to our fiscal situation. So that's clearly not going to be a way of making up for the deficit that's being created.
Well, let's bring in one more factor here, which I don't know if you included or not, and that's an issue that's obviously a major point in this debate, and that's border security. Does your report assume that the border is secure and we don't end up getting hundreds of thousands and millions of additional illegals, or does that an open question that doesn't factor in at all here?
Yeah, it's a great point. So what we're looking at is the number of illegal immigrants who were here in 2011. These are the ones who are eligible for the amnesty. That's the group we're looking at. We are not looking at any additional immigrants, and in fact, that leads to my thinking that we are being rather conservative about this, because not only, as you said, could this encourage further illegal immigration down the road, which will cost money, but the bill being proposed right now actually allows for more people to come here to get, you know, what's called registered provisional status, which is the amnesty, who are not even here currently. If you have been deported from the United States, in other words, you came here illegally, and because you're here illegally, you were deported. We spent all the money and time on judicial proceedings and so on to deport you. You may now come back to the country and get amnesty as long as you have a close relative here who's here legally. To me, that's one of the most egregious violations of the rule of law in this bill. Maybe that's a sort of a separate matter for the fiscal cost, but the point is that there could be even more than just the 11 million we're assuming. Another issue is, of course, the fact that there may be more than 11.5 million illegal immigrants currently in the country. We're just making an estimate here. I mean, we follow the Department of Homeland Security in terms of how many people they estimate, but everyone acknowledges that it's mainly a guess. So if there were more than 11.5 million people, that would, of course, proportionally increase the costs.
So does that suggest then that any sort of, whether you call it amnesty, pathway to citizenship, that sort of thing, is just a fiscal nightmare for this country, no matter how you orchestrate it?
I think that's a pretty good way of classifying it. And by the way, I have no qualms at all about using the term amnesty here. You know, back in 1986, when we had the first amnesty, everyone on both sides called it that. And it's actually really quite similar. You know, they had to pay a fine, they had to wait a certain time period before they became citizens. Everyone called it that. And then somewhere along the line, I guess supporters of amnesty realized that word wasn't polling well, so they changed it to the much more vague pathway to citizenship. And what's so frustrating is that everyone seems to have adopted that, and now suddenly the standard term is the one that, you know, only opponents use. So it frustrates me. So I encourage you to use the word amnesty if you are so inclined.
Jason, it's getting a lot of attention on both sides of this debate. The smartest thing folks can probably do is just read the report for themselves. Where can they do that?
At heritage.org. We have it splashed on our homepage today, and you really can't miss it.
Very good. Heritage.org it is. Jason, thanks very much for your time today.
All right. Thank you.
Jason Richwine is a senior policy analyst for empirical studies in the Domestic Policy Studies Department at the Heritage Foundation. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.